This is the ninth episode of 1F Jeff. I'm sitting in a budget hotel room here in Idaho Falls, Idaho. And I am frantically trying to put some of this rambling detritus that I recorded over the last 5-6 days together into some kind of coherence to release for tomorrow, because I promise to release episodes every Tuesday, and I will stand by that promise until I do not stand by that promise. So this is going to be a little bit raw, and by a little bit raw, I mean very, very raw. The audio may be all over the map. There's not going to be any real production value here. It's just kind of some raw, unfiltered, lightly edited audio that I've recorded over the course of the last 6 days of this road trip. Once I started to actually edit it, I realized that it's a lot. So I'm going to make it 2 episodes. I'm going to release the first part tomorrow, which is today for you. You understand time. And that will go up until right before I get to Wyoming. I have no idea whether this is going to be interesting to you or not. But all I know is I am tired. I have driven every day for the last 6 days, and I'm beat, and it's taking all the energy I have to put this together for you. So I do hope that you do enjoy it. But if you don't, that's okay too. The next part will come out possibly next Tuesday, or possibly sooner. Who knows? I would probably guess on next Tuesday, because I am going into the woods on Wednesday, tomorrow for you. And I'll be in there off the grid for about 5 nights. So I'm guessing I'll probably edit the second part next Monday and release that for next Tuesday. You know what? Even if it's not interesting, it's a document that I'm putting out into the world. And there's some vulnerability in there, you know? So, as always, you can and should email me at 1fjeffpod@gmail.com. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, auto repair advice, I appreciate, as always, you guys listening. Please do all the things that you do to podcasts. And as always, thank you for listening. Thank you for being here, not right here in this hotel room. I was going to say because we wouldn't all fit, but I think that we could all actually fit in here. Not comfortably, perhaps, but we could fit. In a couple years, though, it's going to take like 30 hotel rooms to fit us all. So, and you can say you were here at the beginning, at the very beginning. Won't you feel special? You are special. Don't forget that.
Am I calling this Tour to F? I don't know. I got to think of some other names. Headed for St. Louis, Missouri, and the St. Louis Arch. I'm tired, and I'm frazzled, and my car is so full, it's incredible. All right. I gotta go. The problem is really other drivers. As I've said on this podcast before, I am the only one who knows how to drive on every road that I'm on. Currently driving on I-70 West, heading towards Indiana. There's a giant soybean field to my right and a red Honda Civic to my left. So this is the beginning of my trip, all the way across the country, all the way to another continent, etc., etc., and so forth. Update, the red Honda Civic is now behind me. I'm not sure if they're expecting to pass me, but they shall not. There's a establishment called Uranus Fudge Factory that I've spent some time thinking about stopping at. I've seen several billboards, but no, I don't think I should do that. All right, I'm now in Indiana. Observations about Indiana. The roads in Indiana are garbage compared to Ohio. Beyond that, now I have a cornfield on my left and another cornfield on my right. All of the rest areas have been closed. I've been thinking of stopping at one, but every single one I've passed has been closed. Which is also strange to me during the summer when many people are traveling to close the rest areas at that time. But this is America. Google Maps doesn't understand time zones, I think. It's telling me that I have 4.5 hours to St. Louis. I found a rest area in Indiana, but it's horrible. It's really, I don't know, half the toilets were out of order. Two of the sinks were out of order. Maybe I'm expecting too much of rest areas, but like, it wasn't very restful. I also found out that I'm going to get to St. Louis an hour earlier than I thought because of the time change. And it's surprising to me that Google Maps doesn't account for this when they give you your arrival time. You think that Google, of all companies, would understand. I don't know. It's weird. I'm driving to Indiana still. It's rather dull. I was just thinking about how maybe back in the day this was like a route for the wagon trains, you know, people leaving New York and Philadelphia and wherever the cities were to head out west for whatever opportunities that they were imagining they would find out there. Gold or whatever the fuck. Also, the first place I'm headed to in St. Louis, the first destination, if you will, is the Gateway Arch, the St. Louis Arch, which feels like an appropriate first stop for this trip, you know? I don't know, the Gateway Arch, the arch to the west, something like that. I think that's the point of it. Also near the Mississippi River, which is like really separates the east side of the United States from the west side in a way. But my intermediate stop is coming up in about an hour and a half, and that is the second biggest cross, the second biggest Christian cross in the entire United States. Woo-hee! Second biggest, not the first biggest. I think it's in Texas. The second biggest. So, hallelujah. If I was Jesus and I came back and everywhere I went, there was the instrument of my murder, I don't think I'd be into that. Weird thing that the Christians are doing with that. Weird move. Wonder who came up with that idea. Hey, it's a shame that Jesus died, but what if we, that thing he got nailed to, what if we just put that everywhere and then that's how we can remember him? Something to think about, everybody. Also, this big cross I'm going to be at in like an hour, which I'm clearly very excited about. Can you imagine the size of the Jesus that would have to be, how big Jesus would have to be to get crucified on this motherfucking thing? Like a giant Jesus. Like mega Jesus. So at least they're prepared. In case like a mega Jesus emerges, they can kill him too. Phew! I am now in Illinois, the land of Lincoln. And as predicted, I have also gone back in time from 1:18 p.m. to 12:18 p.m. I feel like shitty Marty McFly. Like, look, what a shitty fucking time machine. I did up my arrival time by an hour, so I will take time zones. Illinois looks much like Indiana. Almost exactly, really. Still a lot of cornfields. There's one on my left. There's a soybean field on my right. Also a big fan of the name of the city, Effingham. It sounds like a swear word, or it sounds like part of a swear word. I'm not going to stop there. Unless that's where the cross is, in which case, I'm in. I have gone 267 miles so far, me and Buddha. If you go to my Instagram, you can see Buddha and all the places. If you want to see pictures of my trip and follow along like that, follow me on Instagram, 1FJeff. I brought a little Buddha statue that I have on my bedside table. And I will be posting pictures of him in different places. I already have. And if you want to see where, go to my Instagram.
I'm at the big cross, the second biggest cross in the United States, Christian-wise. And it's big. It's big. Yeah. It's odd. It actually looks like a Washington Monument with two Washington Monuments sticking out the side. It's like obelisks. It's weird. I don't know if that's what Jesus had in mind, but that's what it looks like.
As you're driving into the city, there's like signs that are like, cross that way. But then you get here and there's like literally nobody really here. I guess Jesus isn't as popular as he used to be. So this cross has its own website, crossusa.org. Maybe they'll advertise on my podcast. I'm going to go check out this Welcome Center.
Hot. It's very warm out there today.
Yes.
Yeah, how are you guys today?
It's cooler in here.
Huh?
It's cooler in here.
It's very nice in here, yeah. Yeah, how are you guys?
Good. How are you?
I'm driving across the country.
Oh, you are.
Yeah, and I'm recording a podcast along the way, so I'm stopping at different places along the way to learn about them. So.
Would you mind registering for us?
Of course.
That you've been here?
And this is who I am.
Oh, yeah, June Ashley.
Yes.
June Ashley. Well, I'm Jeff.
Glad to
meet
you.
Nice to meet you. Jeff?
Hi, Josh.
Nice.
Jeff, nice to meet you.
What town are you from?
I'm from Columbus, Ohio, actually.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
I've been through there quite a few times. Bill's sister lived in Akron, and we used to go through Columbus.
No kidding.
Yes.
So how long has the cross been here? I saw 2021?
Yeah. Well, no, a little longer than that.
Oh, no, 2001.
Here's a paper you can take with you.
Sure.
And it says, answer to consumer questions asked by visitors to the cross. Well, and that way you can look up and check what you got.
Where's the biggest cross? This is the second biggest I read.
Is it in Texas?
Texas?
Yeah, I think it might be. The biggest is always in Texas.
Of course. I just wonder how much bigger it is than this one. Yeah, no idea. I'm curious. I'll have to look it up. There's one in Michigan that's really big too that I went by. That's like big as well, but not as wide as much girth. Yeah.
Yeah.
The cross is 198 feet tall, equal to a 20-story building. The cross arms extend 113 feet. The height of 198 feet was selected as anything taller would have required a red light under FFA regulations. The foundation is 15 feet deep and 20 by 40 feet in size. There are 880 tons of steel within the cross scripture. 42-inch bolts were installed at each of the four corners of the cross support, making a total of 640 bobs in the four sections of the cross.
Wow.
That's on your paper.
Wow. Amazing. Well, that was actually lovely. The two women who were in there, I'm not sure if I actually captured the recording or not, but they were super kind. And I got some free water, and I bought a sticker. The cross opened like 4 days after, 5 days after 9/11, which is kind of interesting. Anyway, it is called The Cross at the Crossroads in Effingham, which, as I've said, is a great name for a town. I'm in St. Louis, Missouri, home of the Gateway Arch. I'm looking at the Gateway Arch. It's apparently the tallest arch in the world, symbolizes westward expansion, and I'm going to go inside of it. It is a big arch.
Any girls excited?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, are you excited?
Yeah?
Yeah.
I'm excited.
They said we'll be able to see out this little window, too, and see the inside of the
arch. Oh, is there a window?
And there will be when it closes, I guess.
Right.
Yeah, we'll see some of it.
Wow, what a weird... This thing from the 1960s?
It is, yeah. I think it's original.
It's
yeah.
That's not reassuring necessarily.
I can tell you, it hasn't changed since the 90s we came here.
Right.
This is inside of the Earth.
That's right.
And the
woo! Oh, look, there's stairs. Yeah.
Oh, that's a great view. Look at that.
So scenic.
Yeah.
I'm super scared.
Oh, you're doing great.
No, we're good.
Somebody can live inside of the Earth?
Yep.
I guess so. Who do you think would live here? I don't know. But do you want to live here?
No.
No. Not enough sunshine.
Where are you from again?
They're from Hawaii, so
oh,
this
from
is
Hawaii?
My niece.
Oh, wow, how nice.
And then we're from Nashville.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
So we're
slowing down a little. You think we're getting close to the top?
Feels like we're getting somewhere close.
Yeah, did you hear what they said? This is the tallest arch in the world. Isn't that cool?
The whole world, yeah. No, in the world, yeah.
You loved it.
The windows were very small. I didn't even know you could go in this thing until like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait. Yeah, I mean, you wouldn't think you could actually.
Right, it's a weird thing to put in a, yeah.
A monument, yeah.
Yeah, why not?
So
yeah.
They didn't make it out of flat, all metal.
Well, just the outside, right? And then they left the inside hollow.
But they put in glass on the outside.
Oh, there you go. We'll tell them.
Like this, though.
We saw the tallest man in the world shoe at the Science Center, didn't we?
Did you really? Oh, that's exciting.
Robert Wadlow. How big?
This big?
His shoes were a size 37 at his time of death, yeah.
I'm in my Airbnb. It's about 9:30 in St. Louis. It was a good day. Aside from this noise, which, so help me God, better end. Listen to this. Anyway, the St. Louis Arch is a strange experience. It's like this 1960s time capsule. And then I had dinner with some people that I met, some friends I met in Mexico City.
Where did we meet?
Oh, we met in Mexico City, learning Spanish, and Jeff knows Spanish really well.
Yeah, sí, bueno, sí.
Excelente. Perfecto.
We met in Mexico City in a Spanish class. And then I remembered that they lived in St. Louis, and I was going to St. Louis, so I was like, oh, I should reach out to them. And here we are. We're all in St. Louis, and it's 100 degrees out.
And honestly, like, it was so fun to see them and talk about traveling and talk about Mexico City and talk about eventually having a compound in Mexico somewhere where we can all live.
I love the idea of it.
With a bunch of different little houses,
we could all have our people could.
Yes,
like,
everyone has their little individual house.
Right, and we could have some that we rent out.
Commune area.
Yes, and we have some that we rent out, and then random people come in from wherever, and we meet them, and we hang out with them for a couple days or a week.
Agreed.
We can make money with the rentals. We can make it a whole vibe. You know, it could be a whole thing.
I agree.
And it's like reasonable to be able to do this is the thing. Like, I'm not even, part of me is kind of thinking, oh, it's a pipe dream, but no, having been to Mexico,
no,
now we're like, it's not
even
a pipe
dream. We're doing this.
Yeah, I'm with you.
At the end of the night, we all put our hands in the middle, like in a sporting event, and we're like, compound. Okay, it's morning of day two, July 24th, Thursday. I'm heading to the City Museum this morning. And then I'm going to start driving north, hopefully up to Sioux Falls, which I think is about an 8 or 9 hour drive. We'll see if I can make it. I haven't booked any lodging for tonight yet. I've looked, but I haven't booked anything because I don't know if I'm going to want to get, I don't know how I'm going to feel after the City Museum and if I'm going to want to drive 8 or 9 hours. We'll see how I feel. St. Louis is very, very hot and muggy. And it's ironic because part of the reason I wanted to do this trip is because I wanted to get out of hot and muggy Columbus, Ohio.
Okay, I'm driving down I-70 still in Missouri, driving across the big state of Missouri, about 2 hours from Kansas City. Then I'm heading north towards Omaha. I did go to the City Museum in St. Louis earlier today, and it was cool. I think that I would have enjoyed it more if it was like, I think they have nighttime hours when you can drink and it's no kids allowed and stuff, because it's a lot of kids, and it's a lot of, like, crawling around things, and it's a really amazing space. It's hard to even describe what they've done to this thing. It's like an old shoe warehouse that they made into, like, a weird playground, amusement park. Like, it's just insane. There's an aquarium in there. There's a bug place. Anyway, it's really cool. So I spent, like, an hour and a half there. I met a guy. I went into the gift store at one point, and I started talking to this guy, Benjamin, who was super interesting, an artist. Used to be in the military. I wish I had my recorder with me, but I didn't. He made some films, sent me a link to one of them. I haven't looked at it yet because I've been driving. That would be unsafe. But yeah, it's nice to, I don't know, there's a liberation I feel when I'm traveling by myself to just talk to whoever. And it's fun to meet people and talk about whatever. So yeah, I was talking to this guy Benjamin about filmmaking, and I mentioned that I had made a film. He was telling me how much he spent to make this feature film that he thought was would do well and didn't do well at all. And he spent a lot on it. I mentioned that I'd spent $500 and gotten a film into Sundance, which is true. And his mind was a little blown by that. Then I thought about telling him the story about Sundance, which is a bit of a mixed bag in my history. I think Sundance is probably my proudest accomplishment in my life, getting into Sundance, at least as a filmmaker. But the mixed bag of it was Michael, a friend of mine from back in my theater days. I knew him since I was probably in fourth grade, maybe third grade. We went to theater school together when we were kids. And we were very good friends. He was one of my best friends. Yeah, we went to Russia together when we were in our 20s. We got a fellowship to go to Russia together. He gave me a signed copy of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, signed by Johnny Depp and Hunter Thompson. I think it was a graduation from undergrad present or something. I forget what it was. Anyway, we were really good friends. I'd stayed with him a lot in New York. But he was an actor. He went to Juilliard. And so our paths didn't really cross because I was not doing a lot of artistic stuff for a while because I went to Korea. And then when I came back from Korea, I went to film school at the Savannah College of Art and Design and got a film degree and a master's, as it were. And then when I thought of making my thesis film, of course, I wanted Michael to act in it because he's an actor and he's a good friend. And he loved the idea for the film, which, you know, I'll put a link in the show notes. It's a bit controversial, but I'm proud of that film. And yeah, we made that film in Savannah. And, you know, there were a few hints of, like, some temper issues that I hadn't come across before when dealing with Michael as a friend. He kind of lashed out at me a few times, which, you know, okay. And that film did well. Didn't get into Sundance, of course. Got into a lot of festivals, but it was well-received. And then I moved to New York after I graduated. I was dating a woman that he introduced me to, who was the actress in my film coverage, my thesis film. I moved in with her in New York in Hell's Kitchen. Kind of a magical summer that was. And we moved to East Harlem into a beautiful apartment in a terrible neighborhood. And long story short, she got cast in a horror film that filmed in Vermont. And again, long story short, she started cheating on me with the director of the film. And when she got back from the shoot, we broke up. It's a long story. That's a whole nother story. That was one of the most crushing, truly crushing breakups I've ever had in my life. I was in such a dark place that I just couldn't see, like, how I was going to get through this. Anyway, at the same time, or around the same time, Michael ended up getting dumped by his girlfriend, who he also really, really loved. So we were both heartbroken, and we were sitting in a bar, and we decided we're going to make a movie about being heartbroken and being kind of aimless. We were both in our mid-30s. So we didn't really write a script. We just made a script, like an outline, and we thought we're going to do it improv because that was kind of what I liked to do. We found some locations that we could use for free. Michael found some locations. We shot in his apartment, in my apartment, in some coffee houses where he knew the people who owned it, and just random places anywhere we could, as long as it was free. We spent about $500 total making the film. We were going to make a feature, but we never ended up shooting any more of it. So I just started editing what we had together into a short. And it was good. It came together well. It was like I was inspired for whatever reason. I don't know. I think they say your creative peak is about 37, and that's about the age I was when I was editing that. So it checks out in a way. And it came out very well. People loved it. And then that got into Sundance. I found out it was Thanksgiving Day because I was actually alone in my apartment on Thanksgiving and got a phone call. And the phone call was like, my dreams, your dreams came true, you know. And at the time I was like, there's nobody I would rather have had my dream come true with than Michael. It felt like the culmination of like of all of our friendship in a way. Like we had separated for a bit creatively and then we'd come together creatively and then we had made this amazing thing that got into Sundance. Michael acted in the film, by the way, and co-produced it. And we had to raise money to actually go to Sundance because they don't pay for anything. You even have to buy your own tickets, I think. And, you know, I dealt with most of the finances, almost all of them, because Michael still doesn't really do the internet at all, as far as I know. We had to do a Kickstarter to raise the money and blah, blah, blah. And I dealt with all of that. I dealt with the money. I dealt with making the awards for people and all that. So we went to Sundance and we had a great time. Most of the cast came out. The film was very well received. you know, everybody wanted us to make a feature-length version of this film. You know, they wanted to see a feature of it. A lot of producers were reaching out to me. It was an interesting time. So after Sundance, this is 2011, early 2011, we had to start dealing with the money part. We got back and, like, we had to buy the awards and pay people back and all this kind of thing. I was broke. I was pretty unemployed at this time. We both were fairly unemployed, maybe entirely unemployed, I think is the phrase. And I got to finish this later because I've got to go to the rest area. That was not a rest area. That was an under-construction rest area with some porta-potties. If you have a rest area that's not finished yet, put a sign up so people know. People won't take the time to stop. Missouri. That's to you, Missouri. You and your genital warts. That's a callback to another episode. If you astute listeners will get that reference. Anyway, so Sundance ends. We come back, and we're sorting out the money, mostly me. And as I said, we're unemployed, and I have asthma, so I had to buy my medication, like an inhaler or something for my asthma. And so I'd use some of the money that we'd raised, I believe. I don't even remember entirely what it was, but long story short, when it came down to, like, the final totals, we were, like, a couple $100 short, right? And I was like, oh, I'll get the couple $100 and, you know, it'll be fine. But Michael, for whatever reason, accused me of stealing this money. I mean, looking back, I don't think it was entirely about the money. I think there was something else going on. I'm not sure what it was. I think part of it was, like, Sundance is very much a director's film festival, so I got a lot of the attention, and Michael always had quite a big ego, and I think it was difficult for him, in a way, to deal with me getting all the attention. Maybe? I don't know. I was also not, you know, I certainly was not an easy person to get along with at times. It was a very confusing time and overwhelming because, like, suddenly I had a film in Sundance, and suddenly the world had kind of shifted. And, you know, I did my best to take it in stride and to not kind of lose my head. And I think I did a pretty good job. I was younger. I was not as emotionally intelligent as I am now. And anyway, Michael accused me of stealing this money. And he essentially said that our relationship is done. That he didn't want to work with me anymore. He didn't want to be my friend anymore. Actually, I should go back. So there was a day when we were shooting after you left, a year prior to this, and we had finished the day of shooting, and I remember we were walking down the street in Brooklyn, right near that bar Charlene's, and something I said triggered him, and he just snapped and, like, started screaming at me about all these things from our past and everything, and he, at one point, I think he got me in a headlock or something. Like, he was, like, assaulting me on the street. It was very strange and very scary, and I had never seen this side of Michael, ever. I mean, I'd seen him lash out at me during one shoot, but there was never anything, like, violent. And so I was very upset. And afterwards, I don't know what happened after that, but at some point I kind of decided that I didn't want to work with him if he was going to behave like that ever again. Like, I was never, I don't deal with violence well. Not that anybody does, but, like, it really triggers me. And it was not okay. But to his credit, like, he did apologize, and it felt sincere, and he really did kind of acknowledge and owned up to it and said it wouldn't happen again. And it didn't. It didn't happen again. Anyway, fast forward to a year later after Sundance, and he severs our relationship entirely. So when I was thinking about, when I still think about what that was about, yeah, I don't entirely know. I mean, I'm still friends with one or two friends of his, and they all said they don't understand it really either. So I was kind of left with this crazy void in my life. Like, he was my best friend, and he just suddenly seemed to decide that was done. And I still don't really understand it. And it was difficult because I was meeting with a lot of producers and stuff, and they wanted to see a feature-length version of After You Left, and Michael was a co-producer on the film. And so I couldn't do it by myself. I wasn't legally allowed to. At one point, I remember Michael sending me an email that said we should make competing versions of a feature-length version and see whose is better. And it, back then, and still to this day to a degree, like, I'm always one to feel like I'm the one to blame. Like, it's me, it's not you. So I didn't even read the email as being that crazy. But looking back, it was kind of crazy. So we didn't do that. Nope, we didn't make any feature-length versions of After You Left. And when I met with producers, I had to tell them that I couldn't do that. And I don't know. I feel like that was my shot to get in the door filmmaking-wise. And I feel like certainly I could have done more myself. But the blow of losing my collaborator, best friend and creative partner and all that, was really hard to reckon with. It still is. But then it was very hard. Because I felt like the reason it was good was because of both of us, you know? It was a true collaboration between both of us and all the people who were in the film. It was really just a beautiful DIY collaborative film that ended up striking gold, you know? At the time of the Sundance thing and the aftermath, Michael was dating another woman. Michael dated many women. He's a handsome man. And I ended up getting coffee with his girlfriend, who was then his ex. This was 2 or 3 years later, maybe four, after the Sundance thing. And she told me all these stories about how he had been a bit sociopathic. Like, she was a little afraid of him when she broke up with him. She had to move out when he was out of town because she was afraid of him lashing out at her. It was some very strange and kind of scary stories, really. And I thought about, oh, the time he assaulted me on the street and the few times that he'd lashed out at me. And it was like, okay, maybe that checks out. And while it made me feel better, you know, hearing these stories, like, oh, okay, maybe it wasn't me entirely anyway. Maybe Michael was dealing with issues. Michael still probably is dealing with issues. At least provided a little bit of clarity, you know. Like, I was like, oh, okay, so that's what was happening. That's where his head was, you know. He's a little unstable. It didn't make me miss him any less, because I'd reached out every so often to send him a text or called him and said, hey, you know, miss you, would love to talk, you know. A few months after we had our severing in 2011, I, you know, sent him the check for the money that I had owed him that he suggested I stole, and he never even cashed it. So, anyway, it's a strange story because it went from being this best thing that ever happened to me to one of the worst things that ever happened to me in the span of like 3 months, you know? And I'm still kind of reckoning with the downfall. I'm still dealing with it, you know? It was another one where I thought, I'm not sure if I'm going to get over this one. But you do. You move on. I ran into him at a wedding of a good friend of mine, maybe, I don't know what year that was, 7 years later, 6 years later. I hadn't seen him once, really. I don't know if I had. Maybe I'd seen him once or twice on the street, but I hadn't said anything. You know, he'd never reached out to me at all. But anyway, we were both at this wedding of a friend of mine that he became friends with because of the film stuff. And we sat down and talked a bit. At first, it was good to see him and to catch up. And he said something like, you know, I did what I had to do at the time, which seemed like a very generic, strange answer. And then when I started mentioning that I had talked to his ex-girlfriend, who he was dating at the time, who told me all the things about him, his demeanor changed. And he suggested that she was a crazy liar and started to be very dismissive of her, because I think he knew what she had probably told me about how their breakup went down and the things that had happened, and felt exposed in that way. And so the best way to shut that down is to call the person who exposed you crazy. I asked him if he wanted to meet for coffee and touch base after the wedding. And then I reached out a day or two later and he never responded. I reached out a couple times, never responded. And that was that. That's the last time I've heard from him. I still hear of him through a friend of mine. I knew he was in a terrible bike accident in Brooklyn about 2 years ago, maybe three, almost died. But he didn't. He's okay. I think he's teaching acting now in New York. It's very hard for me to lose people that I've known for my entire life, because I feel like that's my link to the past. And I often think sometimes when I'm thinking about things that we did together, like going to Russia and stuff, that it would be so much fun to talk to him about it and reminisce about the craziness that went on in Russia and Sundance and all the stuff. But I don't have that, you know? And I do wonder, though, like, if there's ever a way that we could be friends again. And I really don't think that, honestly, that there is. You know, there's too much water under the bridge, or whatever the saying is. But it would be nice to catch up, though, you know? Be nice to say hi, talk about the films we've made, catch up, see how he's doing, tell him I don't have any hard feelings. And I think about that a lot, too. Like, do I have hard feelings? Because he really, not only did he sever my friendship, but he also prevented me from taking advantage of this opportunity that Sundance presented with all these people wanting to make a feature of it. He basically prevented me from doing that because he was a co-producer and he just said no. And that part I'm a little bit mad about. I mean, am I still mad about it? I don't know. Do I forgive him? Mostly. Do I miss him? Yeah, sometimes. Do I wonder what would have happened had we not had our falling out or whatever it was? Yeah, I do. Am I proud of myself for bouncing back from it? Also, yeah. Life's complicated, you know? Relationships are complicated. And it's sometimes even hard looking back to know what happened. But the picture does get a little clearer, you know? Or at least you see what happened since and you're like, oh, so that was supposed to happen, you know? Anyway, there's more to the Sundance story than just that relationship, but that was the big part of it. That was about 15 years ago now, so. Anyway, Michael, if you were out there, if you're listening to this for whatever reason, miss you, my friend. We had a lot of good times together. And a few bad times, but mostly good. I hope you're doing well. Well, I'm approaching Omaha. I don't know how far away I am. But it is bucketing, or it was, and now I'm pulled off to the side of the highway, but I don't know how long I should stay here because it looks like there's just rain up ahead. I think I should just keep going. I don't know what to do. At some point I gotta get going again, but there are cars just whizzing by me, and it's like, when do I go? This is just not a good place to be. It started to pour and I couldn't see and I panicked and I pulled over and now I'm like stuck. All right, I'm gonna figure this out. Well, that was fucked up. That was some of the craziest rain I've ever driven through in my life. I pulled out and then I just followed like a semi for pretty much the whole storm, and that worked because the semi was going pretty slow, and but it was a little scary, a little touch and go for a second there. I am about an hour from Omaha. The skies have cleared up nicely. Oh, I forgot to mention something, or maybe I didn't. But so I met some friends of mine last night for dinner that I'd met in Mexico City. I was talking to them about how I'm flying to Colombia to see Patricia, and that I was excited to finally go south of the equator. And they informed me that most of Colombia is actually north of the equator. So then I looked it up, and goddammit, I still won't get to go south of the equator. The equator is further south than I thought it was. So, I guess I still won't get to see the old toilet go the other way. Not yet. But I will get to go to South America, which will be the first time I've gone to South America. I've been to Central America and Belize, but never to South America. So, and you know what? I'm not sure what state I'm in, but it's actually pretty. There's just beautiful farmland for as far as the eye can see, but it's not like corn. It's like you can see forever. This is where Twisters come through, and it's where they shot The Wizard of Oz. I think that's Kansas, though. Maybe I'm in Kansas. I'm not in Kansas. Anyway, I'm trying to get to Sioux Falls. I think I can do it. It's 4:30. I got about 4 more hours till Sioux Falls. But if I can make it to Sioux Falls and do this long drive today, I won't have to do as long a drive the other days, I don't think. The best part about this drive is that it's not been trafficked, and like I'm just cruising along at 79 miles an hour, and that's really nice. What have I been thinking about? Well, I have been thinking that I bought this lumbar support pillow. My car does not, for some reason, have good lumbar support, at least what I understand the lumbar is. which is the lower back area, and it just doesn't have very good support there. So even when I'm driving like 2 hours to Cleveland from Columbus to see my mom, my back starts to hurt. My lumbar starts to ache about halfway through. But this lumbar support pillow has really done the job. Satisfied with this purchase, I would give you the brand. I think it's Samsonite, actually. I recommend if anybody's considering getting a lumbar support pillow. This is me trying to get some sponsorship. I support and endorse the Samsonite lumbar support pillow. So I just passed a sign that said end road work, which, as we know, means the road work is over. But I remember a story a friend of mine told me when I was a kid. Somebody, they were driving along somewhere, and somebody thought that, like, that saw an end road work sign and thought it was like a, you know, the revolutionary brothers and sisters being like, end road work, power to the roads. So every time I see one of those signs, that's what I think of. It's funny the things you remember. Even funnier the things you forget. Yeah. And Benjamin from the City Museum of St. Louis, if you are listening, shout out to you. The women that I talked to at the Giant Cross did not ask about what the name of the podcast was. So I doubt they will be listening. And if they were, I think they would probably turn it off immediately, because if you're like manning the visitor station, you know, at the second largest cross in the United States, you're not going to like this podcast. I'm going to go ahead and... But you never know. Maybe you will. I don't know. Everybody's different. I was telling Benjamin earlier that this trip I have kind of been assuming the best of people until they prove otherwise. And I just made that up in the moment, but that's actually what I'm doing. And that's been good so far. People have been showing their best selves, or just showing themselves, and we just assume their best selves are not actually that good. But it turns out most people's pretty good, pretty interesting. Pretty open to talking to you if you just want to say hi. So let's all open ourselves up a little bit to strangers, shall we? That's my assignment to you. If you see a stranger on the subway, walking down the street, in a restaurant, sitting by themselves, go say hi. Strike up a conversation. Ask them about their day. You never know what'll happen. And it's ironic coming from me, because I've been a person who has been very, I don't know about fearful, but closed off from strangers for a long time. And I still am, to a degree. And also, when I'm traveling, I feel like a different person than I am when I'm in my home, the place where I live. I was talking to Brett and Taylor last night about this, because they're big travelers. You know, I met them in Mexico, but they traveled for like a year all around Asia and India and all this. And I was talking to them about this last night, about how much more at home in myself, in ourselves, that we feel when we're traveling than when we are in our hometown or the town we live in. Taylor said that it was because she doesn't like to hear the language of English spoken. She doesn't want to understand what everybody says, which I totally relate to. I like the feeling of being like a strange, like a foreigner, you know, like being an outsider, because that's what I feel like that in my day-to-day life, kind of like an outsider. So when I actually am an outsider, it's like, oh, this is like home or something, right? This is comfort for me, because I'm allowed to feel that way. Not that I'm not allowed to feel that in my home, but when I actually am that, then I'm definitely allowed to feel that way. Does that make sense? You can't answer, but you should through the email. 1fjeffpod@gmail.com.
Another observation I've had is the number of marijuana stores and marijuana dispensaries and fireworks stores all across my entire trip so far has been surprising. I guess Americans love weed and explosives a lot, because there's billboards everywhere. There's two at this stop right here, which seems to be in the middle of, I don't even know if I'm in Iowa or something. Anyway, I gotta pee, bye.
When I entered Iowa, immediately the highway turned a red color. So I was wondering why is that? Why is the highway red? I've never seen a red highway. And apparently it is because the stones that they use, the particular kind of stone that they use to make a lot of the highways, is a red color. So who knew? So there you go, a little trivia from the road there. I am now passing the Iowa School for the Deaf. There's a joke there somewhere, but I'm not actually sure what it is, so I'm just going to ignore it. Almost to Omaha, somewhere in middle America. It's the heart that matters more. Anybody? Counting crows? All right. Okay, I'm in Iowa still. And, yeah, it's getting pretty. It's not just cornfields. There's, like, trees, cornfields, and the sky, right? It's big sky country, right? Isn't that what they call this? They're also starting to have hints of mountains. Like, in the distance, you can see little foothills. And there's just, right now, incredible clouds right in front of me. Just big, billowy clouds taking up the whole sky. And the sun's kind of, it's like 6:30, so sun's getting ready to set, so it's hitting the side of the clouds just right. Okay, I am in South Dakota. I just thought I'd share that. I think South Dakota is noted for its high speed limits. I am presently going 89 miles an hour because the speed limit is 80. And I have been told and have tested this theory that if you go 9 miles an hour over the speed limit, the police will not pull you over. I hope this doesn't come back to bite me in the ass, but if you go 10 over, that's where they start to get you. Okay, I'm in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. It was a long drive. Went out to get something to eat, had a beer. Now I'm in the hotel room watching a cops marathon. And yeah, tomorrow I'm heading for the Black Hills and the Badlands and Wall Drug and all that, so super excited about that. It's Friday morning. I'm in Sioux Falls. I'm heading west today. I've driven 1,061.4 miles. I've driven for 16 hours and 51 minutes and an average speed of 63 miles an hour. Well, I was going to go to this sculpture park on my way to the Badlands, just off the highway. So I drove off, I took the exit, and I went into this side road, and I tried to get in, but there was cows blocking the road. And now somebody else is trying to get in, but I don't know how the fuck they're going to get in. Like, can you just drive right past the cows? Like, they were right in the middle of the road, and they had their little calves with them, and I was like, I don't want to just drive up to them. They looked pissed off. I feel stupid. I should have just gone right past those cows. Oh, well. So now I'm on I-90 West. I left Sioux Falls. I stopped at the actual Sioux Falls, which were some neat little waterfalls, a lot of red rocks. I think it was the middle of town. A lot of tourists taking pictures with their cell phones. One of Mac's girlfriends, we took a trip to Iceland. But I remember every time we would go to we'd stop at like a pretty place, like a waterfall or whatever, she would immediately take out her phone and start taking pictures. Like, it wasn't even a moment to take in what you're seeing. It was like, immediately we will document this. And now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, all right, you're being judgy. Which, yes, I'm always being judgy. But also, like, maybe that's some people's ways of consuming tourist sites. Take pictures of them. And I mean, I usually just like stop and like look around and take in the beauty of the surroundings for a moment or two. And then I take a couple pictures and then, you know. Mitchell, South Dakota is the home of the world famous Corn Palace, which is a place that I've always been curious about. But now that I see it and have actually been inside of it, I can say it's actually pretty dumb. No offense to the Corn Palace, but like, I don't really even understand the point of it. But, you know, at least I can check that one off the list. And I got my picture taken with a guy dressed up like an ear of corn, or a woman, I don't even know. Solid selfie opportunity. And it's like the whole town is based around this giant corn palace that there's like a gym in there and a giant gift store on the floor of the gym, and they show a movie, and then there's some like history. It's free to go in because there's nothing to see in there. It's just a fairly ugly building that has some corn elements to it, I guess. I don't know. I didn't expect to be wowed by the Corn Palace, but I didn't expect to be this underwhelmed. I've seen it, so that's exciting. And now I'm going to go to somewhere else. I just stopped at a rest area that was like the South Dakota Welcome Center, although I've been in South Dakota for several hours now. A day, even. lots of talk of Lewis and Clark, and it makes me think about what crazy motherfuckers those guys were. Like, are you kidding? They had no idea it was out here. South Dakota is a state of casinos. Everywhere is a casino. The restaurant I ate at last night was a casino. You can just gamble anywhere. I think it's a lot of Native American stuff. It's a beautiful day, aside from the heat. Wispy clouds, blue sky. It's incredible. The desire to say something profound here, you know? To have some thought that nobody has had about this experience of America. The vastness of it, the beauty of it, the messiness of it, and the cars. Everywhere, cars. So many cars. So many people. So many cows hanging out underneath roadside billboards to get the little bit of shade that it grants them. There's something comical about seeing a giant herd of cows standing underneath a McDonald's sign in the middle of South Dakota, but there you are. Your gas mileage isn't as good when you're going 88 miles an hour, and you're also not going back to the future. 88 miles an hour. I'm heading to an outdated nuclear missile silo now. That seems like Americana. Another thing about South Dakota that honestly I love, there are massive fields of sunflowers. I mean massive. I've never seen a field of sunflowers this big. Right now there's one on the left side of the road that goes back as far as I can see, and it's been going by me for the last 3 minutes, and I'm going 88 miles an hour. That's how big. And there's been three or four of those, equally big, giant fields of beautiful sunflowers. Beautiful fields of yellow, 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 yellow sunflowers, looking over at you, saying hi.
I am now in Anacano Lodge in Wall, South Dakota, home of the famous Wall Drug. So I pulled in, I was stopping at this weird, it's like a place where, it's like an old ICBM missile silo thing. And then I was going to drive through the Badlands, but as I was getting off the highway, I heard a weird like scraping sound from my car. And so I pulled into the parking lot of the missile silo thing and looked under my car, and it looked like the entire like protector, it's like an underbelly protector of the car and the wheel wells and all that, had basically kind of just fallen off. It was totally scraping, like just scraping on the tire. It looked real bad and it sounded real bad. So I thought, well, fuck. So I had some tape, some duct tape in my car, and I tried to kind of tape it up into the, so it wouldn't fall down again. Then I looked into my insurance policy, because they will do, you know, free towing, because I pay for that. But then when I looked into that, they were like, we'll only tow you 15 miles, and if you have to go further than that, you have to pay. And I saw that the closest town was 20 miles away. It's Wall. So I was like, well, all right. I'm just going to drive the Wall, because if I don't turn, it doesn't seem like it's not, it's okay if I don't turn the wheel. And it was a straight shot to Wall. So I drove to Wall very carefully, and got to Wall, went to the service station or the mechanic that I'd found online. And at this point, I have no idea how disastrous this is. Like, I have no idea what's going to happen. So he looks at the car. He's like, yeah, you'd have to get that up on a lift, because it's like the underbelly thing is falling off. He says, and my lift's being taken because I've got this car and that, and I'm still working on it. But then this other guy comes out, and he's like, you can take it to my house. We'll drive to my house, and I can fix that in my house. We can just take that piece off. You don't need it. And I was like, all right. Seems like a really nice guy. And so I followed him to his house, which wasn't very far away, and I pulled it into his garage. He's from, like, South Sudan. He moved here 10 years ago. So he basically proceeds to take the entire... It's a protecting thing on the underside of the car that keeps the under the car from, like, getting wet when water and debris and whatever. But he said, you know, I'll be all right. I can drive for it for a while. Like, I can get to California with it. Because he said it would also take probably, like, a week for most places to get the part in. So I even told him I'm driving, like, 2,000 more miles into California. And he was like, yeah, you should be fine. He said that more than once, which was reassuring. So, yeah, he did that. Took him about an hour and a half. Charged me $60. And then I found a room, because at this point I'm fucking exhausted. It's also 100 degrees here, I think. It's insanity, this heat I've been dealing with. Like, part of the reason for the trip was to get away from the heat in Columbus, and I've just driven to even worse heat. But, you know, it's all part of the journey, right? So now I am at this room in the Econolodge wall. I'm a little bit worried about driving without this thing under my car, because I looked it up, and there's mixed opinions about whether it's a bad idea to drive without that thing, but then there's some people who say that they've driven without it forever and they're fine. So anyway, I'm taking a deep breath and going to kind of relax the rest of the day. There's a pool here. I might go for a swim, but I do have to go back to that guy's house. This is the other part of the story. So the guy took this giant piece of, you know, metal and plastic off the bottom of my car, and was like, you got to take this with you. And my car's totally packed. So I'm like, well, I'm going to have to come back and get that, because my car is too full of shit. I'll go to the hotel, unpack some of my stuff, and then come back and I can put it in my car. So this part, this giant underbelly thing from my car, is now sitting in his front yard. And I got to go get it in an hour or two here. And I don't know what I'm going to do with it. Maybe I'll just find somewhere to just ditch it. I don't know. But because I can't carry that around the whole trip. It's huge. How bad would it be if I just pulled up into somewhere like remote and just dropped it there? It would be bad, but I don't have a choice. What am I supposed to do? Look for a dumpster. That's what I'll do. Anyway, I'm a little frazzled, and I'm very sweaty, and it's supposed to be even hotter tomorrow. And it's just unbelievable how hot it's been. I was going to camp, but who the fuck can camp in this weather? I mean, the settlers could, of course. Lewis and Clark, of course, did. But, you know, maybe it wasn't as hot then because of global warming hadn't. Whatever. Plans were meant to be unplanned. Was it? I don't know what the... What's the saying? Whatever. Beyond all that, everything's going great. I'm having a good time. So I'm in Wall. Went to a restaurant right across the street from Wall Drug, which at this point is just a giant tourist trap. Anyway, the reason I'm recording right now is because I met another, like, I had a really amazing conversation with this guy who was sitting next to me at the bar having dinner, who lives here and is a choir director in Deadwood. And I was thinking at the time, I was like, oh, I wish I was recording this. But also, I don't want to... And this has happened more than once on this trip. It's like I start having these interesting conversations with people, and then I don't want to be like... It's a weird thing to be like, oh, can I record this for my podcast? Can I commodify this? Now, that's what it feels like anyway. It's like the line between real human connection and then documenting that connection, you know? We talked about choir. We talked about how magical it is to introduce kids to the arts at a young age, how choir can change people's lives, how transcendent and profound music can be. And his ex-wife lives in Ohio. And one of his kids lives in Columbus. Small fucking world. I guess it kind of feels gross, you know, to be like, oh, can I record this conversation for my podcast? Because I want to, but I also don't want to, because that's going to change it. It's going to change the conversation. In the same way that not the same way, but in the way a video camera changes people's behavior, a microphone does change people's behavior. Maybe I should just record it surreptitiously and not tell them next time, like hidden mics. I don't know. Anyway, I'm going back, and now I got to find a place to put this piece of my car. That'll be interesting.
Good morning. It's day 4. I slept okay tonight. There's a cadre of bikers staying at my hotel. I think they're going to Sturgis, which is the big biker gathering in South Dakota that starts on, I think, the 1st or the 2nd. I am going to check out of my hotel here, the Econolodge, and I'm going to go to this restaurant, the same place I actually ate at last night, because I have a free breakfast there from the hotel here. Then I'm going to go to Wall Drug. Interestingly, the reason that Wall Drug is on the map at all is it was a little drugstore in this town that I'm in, Wall. They bought it in like 1930, 1931, and they weren't getting any business. And they realized that everybody was going to see the Black Hills and the Badlands was wearing, you know, back in those days, like a lot of clothes. And so they started offering free ice water to anybody who drove by. And that's when it blew up. That's how they became the insane tourist attraction that it is today. Ice water. What a novel idea.
The Badlands is incredible. You can see pictures of it, but it's something to experience. I don't know what even to say about it. It's so spectacular. Just all these red rocks jutting out of the ground, surrounded by the green trees and the sunflowers. It's something to see. One of the more amazing places I think I've ever seen in my life. So, there's that. Rapid City. I'm in Rapid City, South Dakota. Just went to Target to buy some sandwich stuff and some breakfast stuff. I got some bananas. Very exciting. Here's some reflection on this trip. I did not factor in the level of fatigue. Well, I didn't imagine the heat, frankly. I didn't think it was going to be 100 degrees. And that really takes it out of you, to be honest. Or at least it takes it out of me, because I'm fucking tired. Mount Rushmore. I'm at Mount Rushmore. I just saw Mount Rushmore. I saw it when I was a kid. It was about as impressive as it was then, which is not all that impressive, to be honest. But it's entirely appropriate as an icon of America, because it was carved on stolen Lakota land. It was land that the U.S. government gave to the Lakota Indians, I believe in the late 1800s, but then as soon as we discovered gold on it, in the early 1900s, I believe, they took the land back. And then they carved this on the side of one of their mountains. I believe the carver, the sculptor, has ties to the KKK, also appropriate. The laborers who worked on it were paid terribly. Oh, and it's terrible for the environment. I mean, carving into a mountain, you know, that's generational damage to an ecosystem. But yay, American presidents. Yay. Go, America. All right. I'm driving.
So there you have it. Part one of my road trip. Did it feel like you were there with me? I hope so. Part two, Wyoming and beyond, comes next. Thank you for going with me on this raw experimental journey as I try to figure out exactly what this podcast is and what it can be. I appreciate you all. And if you appreciate me and this podcast, please like, rate, subscribe, and review. I realize it sounds like a mantra at this point. Like, rate, subscribe, and review. Like, rate, subscribe, and review. Like, rate, subscribe, and review. I'm not trying to put you to sleep. I'm trying to hypnotize you. And I think it's working. I'm driving south tomorrow, down into Utah, then into Nevada. Or is it Nevada, then Utah? Or is it Nevada, then Utah, then Nevada again? At any rate, I'll be staying in Reno, Nevada tomorrow night. Hopefully in a trashy casino hotel, because I do like trashy casino hotels, even though I don't really gamble. And then I'll be going into California and off the grid and into the woods for 5 nights. I'm looking forward to that. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. Now go talk to a stranger.
Very good, Jeffrey.